And here we are, ladies and gentlemen, the Big Band Broadcasting special Sunday night interview, and what a special program it is this evening. It is part two, because last week, the amazing Russ Kumbalumba life story, we could not get through all of it. We couldn't get through half of it, so here we are for part two. Boy, it's going to be building to a climax this evening. And again, Mr. Damon Lee is with us, our Russ Kumbalumba historian, who's made this all possible. Before we get to Damon, the stories, the music, let's get to some music right away, right now, to get you into that Russ mood. And here he is with a live remote with Rolling in Love. This is WYYR.com, ESCA Radio, a special edition all about the great Mr. Russ Kumbalumba.
This is the National Broadcasting Company.
Russ Kumbalumba's initial offering tonight is taken from the movies, the song Rolling in Love from the picture The Old Fashioned Way.
We're just poor folks. Won't you kindly break the news to your folks? So we're poor folks. Here we are, rolling in love. Got no money, but there's a million in your smile so sunny. Who needs money, honey? Here we are, rolling in love. Can't buy filet mignon. Here we carry on, till our dreams come true. Food doesn't worry me, a plate of soup and beer, a banquet dear with you. Just got two bucks. Won't somebody lend us just a few bucks? With a few bucks, we'll get a license. Then we'll pay the preacher. We'll keep on rolling in love. We're just poor folks. Won't you kindly break the news to your folks? Though we're poor folks, here we are rolling in love. Got no money, but there's a million in your smile so sunny. Who needs a lot of money, honey? Here we are, rolling in love. And by filet mignon, till we carry on, till our dreams come true. Food doesn't worry me, a plate of soup can be a banquet dear with you. Just got a few bucks, won't somebody lend us just a few bucks? With just a few bucks, we'll get a license and we'll pay the preacher. We'll keep on rolling in love.
There it is, Rolling in Love, the great Mr. Russ Kumbalumba, our subject this evening, part two, his life. Once again, I want to thank Mr. Damon Lee, our historian for the evening, also a Hollywood songwriter. Mr. Lee, thank you so much for sitting with us tonight, sir.
Oh, it's a pleasure to be back with you, Chris.
You may or may not know this, sir, but gosh, we were flooded during the week with emails, letters, and all the same sentiment. It was absolutely a joy to hear the 2 hours that went by in a flash. But more than that, they all end with the same thing. Can't wait for part two, and here it is.
Oh, well, I'm so gratified to hear that. You know, I was able to catch last night's broadcast, and I heard some of the nice things that your listeners were saying, and I truly appreciate it. I'm glad everybody liked the show.
Oh, yes. Well, this is right up everyone's alley, anybody who enjoys good music, great stuff, and, of course, great talent, and a great American talent this man was. They would enjoy a presentation like this. It's never been done before. Don't know why. It's being done now, though, and it's being done the right way because we have Damon Lee with us to really fill in all the cracks that we just weren't too sure of in the past, sir. And as I mentioned, Mr. Lee is also a Hollywood songwriter. And if some of those letters that came in, they were asking anything from his repertoire? Can you play something on the show? And Damon did share with me one of his newest compositions recorded not too long ago. And very fitting for the listeners of this program, our great World War II veterans, Korean War veterans, and so forth, a tune that he had written called American Anthem, God Preserve Our Noble Nation. Now, when did you write this, sir?
Actually, I wrote it, I think, in 2004, but I just recently recorded this version in the recording studio with my producer, Dave Siebels, and a very dear friend of mine, vocalist Jerry Roback.
And Jerry Roback is on here singing this particular tune, and the least we can do is play one of your tunes, and it's a good one, folks. Gosh, here it is, the American Anthem, words and music by Mr. Damon Lee, right here on our Sunday night edition of the Big Band Broadcast on WYYR.com.
God preserve our noble nation, victory on her bestow. Liberty be her foundation, tyranny her mortal foe. Bless America and her people, shield our hearts from fearsome woe. God preserve our noble nation, now and forever as in days long ago. God preserve our noble nation, now and forever as in days long ago. God preserve our noble nation, grant her might that right be done. Brightly light her lamp of freedom, constant as the midnight sun. Bless America and her people, out of many we are one. God preserve our noble nation, now and forever as a new day begun. God preserve our noble nation, now and forever as a new day begun.
Those are such beautiful words. We know where your sentiments are coming from, the heart, and myself, and I think all of our listeners all feel the same way, sir. Thank you for that. We really enjoyed that.
Oh, thank you, Chris. Thank you.
Now, Mr. Russ
Cole.
And under Mr. Russ Cole, I'm sorry, but Mr. Russ Colombo. Now, I had mentioned on the Saturday Night Show last week, a week ago yesterday, that we had so much stuff to do, we really couldn't take any callers because I don't know if we have any time for it. And although there were no callers, we still couldn't get through the show. So please fill us in. Where did we get up to last week, sir?
Well, I think we left off with Russ's final recording session that he did in New York City in 1932 with the producer, Leonard Joy, who was substituting for his regular producer, Nate Schildkret. And the last song we played was Auf Wiedersehen, the great song which was made into a big hit by Marlene Dietrich later on.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
And so there was one other tune that was recorded that same day. It was April the 6th, 1932. And it's a song called Paradise, and it's from a Pola Negri film. And if the listeners will recall, I mentioned that early on in Russ's career in Hollywood, he was just more or less discovered by Pola Negri, the great actress of silent films who co-starred with and had a relationship with, some sort of relationship, I'm not sure what it was, with the great Ruth Valentino. And due to Russ Colombo's physical similarity in appearance to Valentino, she was very attracted to him, and in a motherly type of way, I think, and took him under her wing and helped him to start get his career going in Hollywood. So Pola Negri actually first sang this song Paradise in her film entitled A Woman Commands, which is kind of ironical because Russ, in his love life and his dealings with the ladies, he always had an attraction for women who had strength of character, and A Woman Commands, well, I guess that fits right into there. So in 1932, he recorded Paradise.
And here it is.
We've lived and loved our day through, but each night in dreams it started anew. She comes to me as she used to do, my love. And then she holds my hand above. And then I understand above. Her eyes are fire with one desire, that a heavenly kiss. Could I resist? And then I dim the light above. And then we kiss goodnight above.
Listening to that, I recall so many others doing that, from Nat King Cole to Francis Langford. Now, I wonder, I haven't heard Pola Negri sing it, but did she also do the because I think that's the I think that's what's supposed to represent the paradise part. It's so fitting for Russ to do that number.
Well, I don't know if Pola Negri actually recorded it, you know, as a record for release. All I know is for sure that she did sing it in the film itself. I've never seen the film. I really don't know if she added the crooning part.
Because everybody else who did that tune, they always do, and was always assumed that
yeah.
was supposed to represent the paradise part. Here's Russ doing it. If it was not done before that, then he's the one who really could be credited to some of the writing of that song, because everybody else copied that part of the song.
A lot of people copied a lot of things that Russ did. That's the great thing about Russ Colombo. He was such a great influence on so many people.
I could imagine.
Yeah.
I could imagine.
But, so that pretty much wrapped up that. That was the Leonard Joy session. But, you know, I wanted to, just an aside, I wanted to speak just a little bit about Leonard Joy, if I might, Chris.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
You know, you and I have come to know each other because of our relationship with the great Herb Jeffries.
Yes, sir.
Herb has been my close personal friend, I mean, like my godfather, for 30 years and or more. And so Leonard Joy was the A&R man. After this session with the Russ Colombo thing, he went on to become the A&R man, the producer with RCA Records, who worked with the great Duke Ellington. And it was Leonard Joy who presided over the recording session on the 28th of December, 1940, where Herb Jeffries recorded Flamingo.
Mm-hmm.
And Leonard Joy didn't care for that song. And so it pretty much went on the shelf. And then Herb had left the Duke Ellington Orchestra and had gone on to other things. And sometime later, 6 or 7 months later, Leonard Joy was assigned to other work by the record company, and a new A&R man was assigned to work with Duke Ellington. And he found that recording of Flamingo and said, hey, why is this on the shelf? This would be a great hit song. And they released it. And then, of course, the rest is history. So
wow.
Leonard Joy, that's our little tie-in between the great Russ Colombo and the great great Herb Jeffries.
Herb Jeffries, and I just learned something else. So, in other words, what you're telling me is when this became that big hit for Herb Jeffries with the Ellington Orchestra, he wasn't even with the band at that time.
He wasn't with the band. He actually had left the orchestra and had taken a job singing at a club here in Los Angeles.
So what happened? I mean, it was a big hit.
So what happened was it was the summertime of 1941, just a few months before Pearl Harbor,
mm-hmm.
and Herb was singing, you know, in a club here, and actually getting more money than he was getting with Duke Ellington, because Duke was notoriously economical with his money. Let's put it that way.
I understand.
And it didn't overpay people.
Mm-hmm.
So anyway, Herb had a night off, and he was just happened to be walking down the street, and he walked past this a club or a bar or whatever it was, and the door was open because it was a hot summer night here in L.A., and he heard this song coming out of the bar and, you know, from the jukebox, and he went in and he asked the bartender, what is that song that you've got on the jukebox? And the man said, are you kidding? He said, that's the hottest song in the country right now. And then Herb went back to his hotel where he was staying, and there was a message, please call Duke Ellington in New York, it's urgent. And, of course, Duke said, oh, Herb, please, he called him Hobby, please, I want you to come back with the band and
get
more money. And that's what happened, yes.
That's what I'm curious about. I mean, the man left the band, and that was a hit record. I was curious, did he go back with the band and now start touring with the band with that record? That's what happened predominantly?
That's exactly what happened.
Okay.
Because when Flamingo was originally cut, it was just done as a demo. And Duke Ellington was really, he did it because the two songwriters, Edmund Anderson and Ted Gruyere, who wrote Flamingo, wouldn't stop bugging Duke Ellington, please record our song, please record our song. So he had a little extra time left over after a recording session on that date in December of 1940. So he sent for Herb and he said, Herb, do me a favor, just record this vocal. I want to get rid of these guys. And Herb was paid the astronomical sum of $20 to record Flamingo.
Wow, probably did it in one take, I would imagine, and got out of there.
Yes, he did. He did it in one take. Yes, he did. So that's the story of, you know, that's
okay.
My little tie-in. That's a little aside on Mr. Leonard Joy.
Well,
God rest his Cole wherever he met me.
Brought up Leonard Joy. We went off of a tangent there, but it was so interesting. I had to find out. That is so terrific. Now, what's next in store for us with Mr. Ruskell? Now, where are we at right now?
Okay, well, Russ, you know, he had trouble with his, you know, radio programs with NBC. They couldn't find a sponsor for him. The man who ran NBC Radio hated Russ's manager, Con Conrad. It was a whole mess. Russ went out on the road and ended up back in Hollywood. And he also had a problem with his record company, which was RCA Victor, because RCA Victor came up with the bright idea, hey, let's have an economy label and press out cheap records and sell them for less money. Of course, this was during the Depression. Mm-hmm. And they were records of a lower quality. And they wanted to do this, you know, with Russ Colombo and put his records on this cheap label. And Russ wasn't having any of it. And so they got into a huge dispute. And Russ was not able to record for quite a while. Then Russ put together his own orchestra, went on tour, ended up back in Hollywood. And I might add that a couple of the alumni of the great Russ Colombo Orchestra that people might be familiar with, and I know you play their music from time to time on your...
Mm-hmm.
Broadcasts. Benny Goodman was in the Russ Colombo Orchestra, and he more or less, you know, took the job of organizing the orchestra for Russ, and he came up with a great little drummer to put in there, a man named Mr. Gene Krupa. So, so here you have Russ Colombo, who's an immortal, and his orchestra has these other two great. Great music immortals, Benny Goodman and Gene Krupa in it.
About what time frame was this? About what time frame was this?
Well, this is like in 33, 34.
Okay.
In that vicinity. 30, you know.
Mm-hmm.
Right there. Mm-hmm. And so, eventually he ended up back where he started out at the Coconut Grove at the, you know, great Ambassador Hotel, in Los Angeles. And, started playing there again, and we have, you know, some really nice tunes that he was playing in those days, and I think we should start with Street of Dreams.
Kings don't mean a thing on the street of dreams broken in two can be made like new on the street of dreams. Gold, silver, and gold, all you can hold is in a moonbeam. Poor, no one is poor, long as love is sure on the street of dreams. made of dreams.
There it is, Field of Dreams of the great Mr. Russ Colombo, a tune recorded by so many right to this day. Even Barry Manilow recorded it. I mean, gosh, whoever wrote that made a bundle. What do you say, Mr. Lee?
Well, you know, in the business, we call a song like that an evergreen.
An evergreen.
It's evergreen. That's right. It does nothing but generate green cash. It never goes out of season. It never goes out of style. It's just a wonderful, wonderful song.
Oh,
you know,
gosh.
Then while Russ was at the Coconut Grove, of course, that was the place to be seen. And, all of the movie stars would go there, and they used to have dance contests, and people like Joan Crawford would go there. And, of course, the great Carol Lombard, also known in some circles as the profane angel. She liked to go to the Coconut Grove. She was the profane angel because she had the face of an angel, but she had the mouth of a sailor.
Oh, my gosh. I didn't know that.
Oh, yes. Oh, yes. She spoke her mind, and there were no filters on it. She told it like it was, so to speak, but a lovely person. And she decided to go to the Coconut Grove one night with a gentleman, a friend of hers from Hollywood, and they sat at a ringside table, naturally, being the VIP that she was. I mean, at one point, she eventually became the highest paid actress in Hollywood in her time. But they went there, and Russ Colombo was leading his orchestra, and he saw her, and he went up to the table, and he began singing directly to her in front of everybody, "Save the Last Dance for Me."
Save the last dance for me, sweetheart. Give me one chance before we part. I've been waiting the whole night through for my chance to dance with you. Just a moment to hold you tight. Just a moment and then good night. You can keep on dancing with others romancing, but save the last dance for me. Just another dance, and then the time will come to part again. Make this a night of nights for me, one I can hold in memory. Save the last dance for me, sweetheart. Give me one chance before we part. I've been waiting the whole night through for my chance to dance with you. Just a moment to hold you tight. Just a moment and then good night. You can keep on dancing with others romancing, but there's the last dance.
Wow. good stuff here at WYYR.com. Unprecedented. Never been done before. It's being done now. I can't understand why it hasn't been done before. Damon, it boggles my mind. Why wasn't this done before? I just don't understand. I mean, gosh.
Well, Russ Colombo has been gone for many, many years now, and I just don't know why, but
well, I mean, he inspired so many people. So many people copied him. He inspired people. There are so many things going on, and the name has been out there.
That's true, but the people that he inspired became huge stars in their own right. I mean, people like Frank Sinatra, and so that's who then people talked about. You know, so I'm not sure why. You know, Russ was very young when he died. He didn't leave a huge catalog of recordings because he was only 26 when he died, number one. And also, for more than the last year of his life, he wasn't able to record because of this dispute with his record company. So we can only imagine, you know, how big his legacy would be today if he would have had a normal length of, you know, lifetime.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. I mean, 26 years old and gone, and just this record alone. I mean, a voice like that, the people, again, just can't imagine. That's the voice of someone in their 20s. It just, that's how good the man was. How would his voice been when he's in his late 40s? I mean, it just boggles the mind. And
Well, it does, but unfortunately, this is the way life is, and some of our greatest stars have not had a real long life. I mean, just, what would James Dean's career have been?
Mm-hmm,
you know,
mm-hmm.
if he achieved immortality with only three films and died at mm-hmm. the age of 24,
mm-hmm.
would he have been? But we don't know. I mean, it's all conjecture. But in any event, Carole Lombard, as you might imagine, I think she was pretty smitten when this beautiful, handsome guy came up and started singing this song to her. And then the gentleman that she was with, after Russ finished singing this song to her, Save the Last Dance for Me, he said, you know, I have the feeling that you're going to hear from Mr. Colombo again. And Carol looked at him and said, well, I don't think I'd mind that too much. And the next day, a dozen yellow roses arrived at Ms. Lombard's dressing room at the movie studio. Mm-hmm. And it was Mr. Colombo. And the romance started.
Wow.
And it became for both of them the romance of their lifetime. Each one was the love of the other's life.
Hmm.
And so Russ sang very many romantic songs to and for Carole Lombard, including our next selection, As You Desire Me, 1932, was originally recorded.
As you desire me, so shall I come to you. However you want me, so shall I be. Be it forever, or be it just a dove. As you desire me, let come what may. I doubt not but you will do what you will with me. I give my soul to you. You're my destiny. Come take me. My very soul is yours. As you desire me, I come to you. Thank you.
is the great Mr. Russ Colombo, as you desire me, as nobody else could sing, gosh almighty. Mr. Damley, thank you so much again for sitting in with us. This is, gosh, we've been doing Russ Colombo now on WYWR for, gosh, well, 2 hours last week, over 3 hours now. I mean, this is pretty incredible stuff, and great recordings, great stories, thanks to you. Gosh, and so many more things to come. And, you know, we always say callers, if you don't mind, let's just pick one out at random here. There are a lot of people online listening, and let me see. I see Queens, New York is calling in. Are you out there?
Yes, I'm listening to the program and enjoying it and bringing back a lot of memories of those days. And especially that song that he made, Prisoner of Love, that's really something. I heard he ran a restaurant or something with the family. Was it an Italian restaurant?
Yes, indeed. Actually, they had a restaurant called Gigi's, and it was on Western Avenue in Hollywood, not too far away from the Paramount movie studios. And in the family ran it. Mostly it was operated or in the control of Russ's older brother, Fiore, and he pretty much ran the operation there, but they had several of the, you know, family members working at the restaurant, and Russ liked to work over there, too. He was a teenager at the time, maybe about 17, but Mama wouldn't let him work at the restaurant until she was satisfied that he had practiced his violin enough that day, and when she was satisfied with that, then she'd let him come over to the restaurant and putter around, because eventually Russ became a very, very good cook, and he would invite his friends over to the house, and he'd cook for them all and everything. But Gigi's on Western Avenue, it was, as I said, close to Paramount Pictures, and they kind of got a reputation for, well, you know what, if you're a starving actor, go there because these people got a big heart and they'll feed you even if you don't have any money. And so in addition to their regular customers who actually could afford to pay for their meals, such as Charlie Chaplin and John Barrymore, there were customers there who, well, they were just kind of up and coming, and they really didn't have a lot of money in their pocket, so sometimes the Colombos just kind of fed them for free. People such as Robert Young, Cary Grant, Randolph Scott, Irene Dunn, and Clark Gable.
Wow, that's really something.
And, of course, the connection with Clark Gable. Here he was, as a starving, unknown actor, eating at the Columbus restaurant, Gigi's, and then years later, after Russ had died, he married Russ's sweetheart, Carol Lombard.
Wow. What a great family. And could you imagine how great that food was then?
Oh, I would love to have eaten there. Unfortunately, I think there's a McDonald's at that location on Western Avenue now.
Oh, what an insult.
I know, Gigi's is long gone.
There should be a bronze plaque on the side of that McDonald's saying Gigi's, for crying out loud.
It should be, but it isn't. Oh, well.
Hey, Queens, New York, thanks so much for that great question, sir. Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
You're welcome.
And
thank you.
In fact, I think you sent one of the letters in last week, how much you enjoyed last week's show.
Because I used to go down to the village here in New York City, down in Mulberry Street, the restaurant called SPQR. I knew the owners there. And they had a lot of big singers there, like Frank Sinatra Jr.
Right.
And all the people there.
Right.
And this brings back a lot of memories also. Thank you.
Well, thank you, sir, and thanks for the call. And if you don't mind, let's just take one more call. And I see Long Island, New York is on the line. And what is your question for our historian, Mr. Lee?
Good evening. It's a pleasure, Mr. Lee. Believe me, what an interesting show.
Thank you.
I have a question. I had heard or read, I can't remember, that Russ had owned some nightclubs. Was that true?
Well, he did. Yeah, he made the attempt in New York City to, you know, get a nightclub thing going. Unfortunately, it wasn't very successful. You have to remember, this was in the depths of the Depression, and at the time, although he was on NBC Radio, they relegated him to a time slot of midnight to 12:15 a.m. I mean, so he really didn't have a prime time audience, and then the people at the time didn't have a lot of money, you know, extra money to spend, and so it's difficult in the best of times to get a nightclub or a restaurant or that sort of thing going, but in the middle of the Depression, well, it was probably 10 times harder. But you're right, he did make that attempt.
Oh, thank
wow.
you. I was curious about that. I believe that I read it somewhere. But what a great show. Mr. Lee, this is very interesting. Chris, thanks for hosting it. I got my ear glued to the radio.
Thank you, sir.
Thank you, sir. Thank you. Did not know that. He did. And so where were we right now with Carol Lombard and flowers and all kinds of stuff?
Oh, well, you know, I mean, he just loved that woman. He loved Carol Lombard. She loved him. And she recognized that in order for, especially in those days, but even today, I suppose, in order for a relationship to work out between a successful man and a successful woman, it's almost imperative that the man's career be bigger than the woman's. And so she really dedicated herself to taking Russ under her wing to mold him into a performer who would have the experience and the stature to rise above her level in show business and have the bigger career. And that's how much she loved him. It was a very unselfish, unconditional love. And, of course, you know, Russ responded, you know, by looking at her and saying, Carol, you're my everything.
You're my everything underneath the sun. You're my everything rolled up into one. You're my only dream, my only real reality. You're my idea of a perfect personality. You're my everything, everything I need. You're the song I sing and the book I read. You're a way beyond belief, and just to make it real, you're my winter, summer, spring, my everything. Everything I need. You're the song I sing and the book I read. You're a way beyond belief, and just to make it real, you're my winter, summer, spring, my everything. You're my only dream, my only real reality. You're my idea of a perfect personality. You're my everything I need. You're the song I sing and the book I read. You're away beyond belief, and just to make it brief, you're my winter, summer, spring, my everything.
Is that beautiful? I remember Billy Eckstein singing that, which was really one of my favorite records of Billy Eckstein. I saw him a few others he's done. He's got so many great records. Yeah, You're My Everything. The great Mr. Russ Colombo here on WYYR.com. Yes, your radio. Sitting in with us tonight is, wow, a Russ Colombo historian. Could you imagine? We've been looking for this man for almost two decades. And we found him. And his name turned out to be Damon Lee. Right there in Studio City, California. Where else, of course, will you find someone like this who is knee-deep into the culture, the history, and all the talent. And the talent he is himself. You have to be to survive in a town like that, sir. Gosh. Thank you so much again.
Thank you. You know, it's funny. You mentioned Billy Eckstein. Yes, Billy Eckstein recorded many, many songs by Russ Colombo. Because he was a great Russ Colombo fan and highly influenced by Mr. Colombo. He was a great, great singer, one of my favorite singers from my childhood. I remember, you know, hearing Billy Eckstein on the radio when I was just a little lad, and I always loved him. A tremendous talent, tremendous. And as a matter of fact, last Labor Day weekend, I was at the Los Angeles Sweet Jazz Festival with Herb Jeffries, and a young lady came up with her son to say hello to Mr. Jeffries, and it was Gina Eckstein, Billy's daughter, and her son Gibby, Billy's grandson. And so I had the pleasure of meeting Gina and Gibby.
Isn't that something?
Yeah, yeah.
Wow.
So that was really nice. Anyway, so here we are. Oh, and we were also talking about people, you know, who were influenced by Russ Colombo, and I happened to meet one man who was, I think, influenced by him, because in the early days, when Russ was still a young fellow, and the family was living in San Francisco, his father organized the family into the Colombo Ideal Orchestra, and it was all the kids in the family, and they actually played out and made a little bit of money and got a little notoriety in the San Francisco area, and they were pretty much the forerunner of the family band or orchestra. And years later, a man who became a good friend of Russ Colombo's, Guy Lombardo, started a family band, and he became quite successful at it.
Everybody, yeah.
Carmen
King family. There's so many of these family, King family. The Cowsills. It goes on and on.
The Jackson Five.
The Jackson Five. Yes.
There you go. So anyway, and I happened to meet Mr. Lombardo. I had the pleasure and honor of meeting him when I was a young man in the Navy in 1968, and I met him at the Jones Beach Marine Theater, where he was conducting the orchestra in a production of South Pacific. So I got to meet the great Guy Lombardo. So I shook the hand that shook the hand of Russ Colombo.
Wow, that is great. Yeah. Guy Lombardo.
Anyway, so moving right along. As I mentioned earlier, Russ had a big brouhaha with RCA Victor Records, and he wasn't allowed to record until his contract finally expired at the end of July in 1934. And as soon as it expired, he signed a new recording deal with Brunswick Records, which had been the record label for Bing Crosby. And Bing had moved on from Brunswick, and then Russ moved in. And so we're getting now toward the end of his life. And in August of 1934, on August 31st, Russ had his final recording session. And he recorded four songs, three of which were from his new movie, forthcoming movie called Wake Up and Dream. with June Knight and Roger Pryor, his co-stars. And so he recorded some of these songs from the movie that day. And the first one that we'd like to play is When You're in Love.
Love is supposed to be exquisite. I wonder, is it wild or tame? What is the proper way to treat it? How can you beat that funny game? Ever since the world began, it's been puzzling every man. Love's a lot of trouble, and yet a blessing from above. You must learn each rule, you're going to school when you're in love. Love will gently pet you and then upset you with a shot. Whether big or small, you'll learn how to crawl when you're in love. Love's a train, you're always traveling, but you don't know where you're bound. Love's a game, you keep unraveling, it's a merry, merry-go-round. Love is bound to hit you, so make it fit you like a glove. You're a beggar alone, but a king on a throne when you're in love.
Columbo, as only he can put over a song like that. No question about it. Here we're at WYBR, and Mr. Damon Lee is sitting in with us, and thank you again, sir. And, hey, what are your thoughts, sir, as we move along?
My thoughts are this. You know, you're a beggar alone, but a king on a throne when you're in love. What a great thought, isn't that? You know, this last recording session for Brunswick, these are some of my favorites of the Russ Columbo catalog, because right at the end there, he had teamed up with a man named Jimmy Greer who ran his orchestra for him.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that they really made some wonderful music together. And so moving on, the next song is also from Wake Up and Dream, 1934, Russ's film that he did for Universal, called Let's Pretend There's a Moon.
Sweetheart, here's a little proposition that I've been wishing I could reveal. Now if you'll only help me concentrate now, I'll try to relate how I feel. Here are you and here am I. No moon in view, no star on high, but it's a lovely night to spoon. Let's pretend there's a moon. Nights like this were made for love, regardless of the moon above. The time and place are opportune. Oh, let's pretend there's a moon. Poets like to tell about the spell of moonlight bliss, and they weave it into every rhyme. Now we don't need the moon above to tell us when to kiss, so why should we be wasting time? Here are we, and here is love. Who cares if there's no moon above? Let's make believe the month is June. Oh, let's pretend there's a moon. To tell about the spell of moonlight bliss, and they weave it into every rhyme. Now we don't need the moon above to tell us when to kiss, so why should we be wasting time? Here are we, and here is love. Who cares if there's no moon above? Let's make believe the month is June. Oh, let's pretend there's a moon.
Oh, swooning. We are swooning here at WYYR.com with the dulcet tones, the incredible talent of the great Mr. Russ Colombo. There's been violins all over the place here. I mean, this man is amazing. And I wanted to mention hearing a story prior that Damon had given to us. Somebody called him asking about an Italian restaurant, and his mama said, you can't go there and cook until you are done with your violin playing. And, well, mama's always right. And because of that, he became a virtuoso and a great cook. And she knew what she was doing, sir. And you know what you're doing. And thank you so much for being with us here tonight. This is great. This is great.
Well, you know, the thing of it is, with these recordings, with this little group of recordings here with the Jimmy Greer orchestrations and arrangements, you know, the average person doesn't really stop to think how much a great arranger and orchestrator can mean to a performing artist like Russ Colombo. But if you take, for example, Frank Sinatra, maybe his greatest period of all his recordings was when he worked with the great Nelson Riddle.
Mm.
And such a huge, huge difference to the whole Frank Sinatra sound.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that, you know, with Russ teaming up with Jimmy Greer, that he had found his Nelson Riddle, if you would. And, you know, we can only guess where that would have gone if they have been able to spend the next 10 or 20 years making beautiful music
Could
together.
Could you imagine Russ Colombo with his voice 20, 30 years later with Nelson Riddle and all these people? I mean, you know, Nat King Cole had these people were made, all the voices together. What a great point you made, sir. Wow, I haven't thought about that. Yeah, a hit like you can't believe.
Well, the next song is... Russ had an overriding ambition. He was really interested in the movie business beyond the music business, and he saw himself as becoming a movie star, which he was well on his way to doing, but he also was very interested in creating music for the movies. And so he would write some of his own material, and he did write one song, which he managed to get into the movie Wake Up and Dream, and he wrote it especially for Miss Carol Lombard, because she was just too beautiful for words.
You're like a lover's dream in the spring, a song of the trees and the birds. All I can do is say it, too beautiful for words. You're like a sweet refrain that will cling, a strain that the angels prefer. All I can do is play it, too beautiful for words. Like the music of a Berlin or a Gershwin, or even a moonlight serenade. Though I can't compare with Berlin or with Gershwin, to me you'll always be a perfect rhapsody for you. Bring an inspiration to sing a song that can never be heard. You're just a lovely love song, too beautiful for the music of a Berlin or a Gershwin, or even a moonlight serenade. Though I can't compare with Berlin or with Gershwin, to me you'll always be a perfect rhapsody. An inspiration to sing a song that can never be heard. You're just a lovely love song, too beautiful for words.
Wow. he just really tugs at the heartstrings, Mr. Lee. I can understand why you've gotten knee deep into this man's career and why we need to keep this thing going, because it's just such a shame of what happened. We'll get to that a little bit later on. But thank you for getting that record to the office here, because I've never heard it before, and that was just so terrific. Thank you, sir.
Well, if you had that sort of an emotional reaction to that song, you can just imagine Carol Lombard's reaction when she first heard it and realized that it was written for her.
Wow. Wow.
I'm sure she was quite thrilled.
Wow. We have it to be, oh gosh. No, we have another record from this era. Before we get to the record, let me just take one more caller. And then, folks, I'm sorry. There are so many calls in line here. It happened last week without calls. We didn't get enough time. Let's just take one more caller, and we have to move on. But your thoughts and interests are important. Makes for a good show. And I see Philadelphia is calling in. What is your thoughts and or comments for our Russ Columba historian this evening, sir?
Hello, gentlemen. That really was too beautiful for words. I just wanted to let you know, I discovered Russ Columba in my early 20s. I was frequenting a small little record shop in Philadelphia here called the Music Box, which is long gone. Mm-hmm. But this guy used to sell everything. He sold half of sets of 78s. And
all right.
He would get sampler records in. He had an RCA LP sampler of a lot of different artists.
Mm-hmm.
And on there was Bing Crosby with I
right.
Surrender Dear and Russ Columba with Prisoner of Love.
That's how you found out about Russ Columba?
Yeah, he let me preview it. And I played. When I heard Russ Columba, it's like, well, this guy's better than Bing Crosby. I had never heard of him, and so the guy told me something about his history, but I've been a fan ever since. But what I wanted to ask Mr. Lee is, did he have any formal vocal training? I mean, hear a guy like this, 26 years old, he sounds like he's been singing for years.
Well, that's a great question. Thank you, sir. Thank you for asking it. And, you know, we love Bing Crosby. I mean, it's just, you know, it's a matter of taste. And it's just like, well, you're from Philadelphia. You can go to the corner of 9th and Passyunk, and some people prefer Pats, and some people prefer Chino's. Really cheap steak.
Exactly.
Yeah, I'm a Chino's man. but to answer your question, yes, well, first of all, Russ had perfect pitch, so it made it easy for him to sing well. But he did have vocal training, and as a matter of fact, Russ was very interested in opera, being Italian, naturally. And so he actually did study with an operatic vocal coach whose name escapes me at the moment. But he did actually take formal training, and he was looking forward at some point in his career to actually doing a bit of opera. And who knows, he probably would have been the forerunner to the great Mario Lanza, who brought opera to the people, didn't he?
Right. Well, I'm not surprised, because it shows in his singing, the control, the emotion and all. It does smack of operatic training.
Yes, sir. You're right. You have a good ear.
thank you so much, Philly, for calling in. Great question. And more insight to the great Mr. Russ Columba. That's why we take the calls. And thank you, Philly. I appreciate that, sir.
Thank you.
Where are we going with this now, sir? Mr. Damon Lee.
Well, where we're going, unfortunately, is we're getting toward the end. And not just toward the end of the show, but toward the end of a brilliant lifetime, a brilliant career. On that day, August 31st, 1934, at the Brunswick Studios in Hollywood, the final recording of Russ Columba's life was also a song called I See Two Lovers.
I see two lovers on the moonlit sand, in a land of palms. And as he takes her little trembling hand, she melts in his arms. I see two lovers in a land apart, heart to heart, what bliss. And in my loneliness I see them start one heavenly kiss. I hear their song at the shrine of love, the wine of love flows free. Is there no voice in the spring of love to sing of love with me? I see two lovers while alone I stand by the sand and sea. I wonder when I'll find the trembling hand sweet and tender for me. Heavenly music, gorgeous perfume, voices of night, a silvery light chasing the gloom. Soon a sweet picture comes into view, and my heart is still before a thrill I never knew.
Please, I have to make an announcement. Now calls are flooding in. Guys, I'm sorry. Maybe I shouldn't have taken those calls. We're getting to the meat of the show right now, Mr. Damily. So this was his last recording.
That was it. I See Two Lovers. That was the last song he ever recorded. Now, the band, the Jimmy Greer Orchestra band, were all so elated after this session. This man, Russ Colombo, came into the recording studio and did two takes of each song, and the first take was the keeper. I mean, that's how well prepared he was. And everybody, Jimmy Greer and his entire orchestra members, they were all so happy at the end of this session, and they said, hey, let's go celebrate. We're all going to go down to Baja, California, to Ensenada, and go fishing and have a good time, drink a few beers, whatever. Russ, why don't you come with us? And he agreed to it. And then, unfortunately, a little bit later on, he changed his mind because his mom, Julia, was in the hospital and was a little worried about her and didn't want to leave town. And, unfortunately, it was a fatal decision because in 2 days after this recording session on the 2nd of September, he was shot and killed by his best friend, Lansing Brown, at the home of Lansing Brown at 584 Lillian Way, a house that still stands today that I've actually been to and observed, photographed, whatnot. It's just down in Hollywood near the corner of Melrose and Vine. So anyway, that's what happened. I mean, so we should get into a little bit about Lansing Brown and how he came to be Russ Colombo's best friend, because if you read things on the internet or wherever, there's so much misinformation, so many myths, so many wrong stories out there. I've read one account where Lansing Brown was introduced to Russ Colombo by Carol Lombard. This is completely wrong. Actually, as I mentioned earlier when we were talking about Gigi's Restaurant, which was run by Russ's older brother, Fiore. Now, Fiore was 5 years older than Russ. You must remember that Russ Colombo was the 12th child in a family of 12 children. Well, I think only 8 of them survived birth or infancy, but anyway, most of his siblings were quite a bit older than he, but the one who was closest in age to him was Fiore, who who was born in 1903, so he was 5 years older than Russ. So he was the big brother that Russ looked up to his whole life and who became Russ's best friend and confidant.
Mm-hmm.
And so anytime Russ had anything on his mind or wanted, needed somebody to talk to, it was always Fiore. Now, Fiore got the bright idea that, hey, we're living in Hollywood now. I want to be a movie star. So he was running around the studios trying to get work as an extra or a bit part guy or this or that. And he needed some photographs. And through some twist of fate, he ended up at a photographic studio where Lansing Brown was employed. And Lansing Brown took pictures of him, and they became friends. So Fiore and Lansing Brown were very good friends. Russ was still in high school at this time, and that's when he first met Lansing Brown. So fast forwarding to 1929, Fiore was killed in an automobile accident.
Oh, my God.
And this was and at the age of 26.
Oh, my God.
The same age that Russ was when he died. And I might add that Fiore is entombed in the same alcove at Forest Lawn Glendale as Russ is. So when you go to visit Russ's crypt, he's in one wall and directly opposite is his brother Fiore. And Fiore was there.
I mean, Mr. Lee, this whole thing has really, I mean, last week was something, this is something else, but I mean, last week, we talked about Dorothy Dell, the first love of his life, 17 years old, just finished a movie, with, Shirley Temple. She died in a car crash. And we talked about, some other books we were reading at the time, about the Russ Colombo. He was so, thrilled about it. He tried to get in contact with the publisher. They told you this man, the author of that book, of the, Russ Colombo book, passed away 8 days after the publishing of it. And now we're finding out about this, and then Carol Lombard, and then what is going on here? This whole thing is, oh my gosh.
Well, this is the interesting thing about visiting Russ Colombo's crypt. Usually when you visit someone's crypt, well, you know, their remains are inside that wall, where it has a plaque with their name on it. But they were never actually standing in that room where you're standing. But Russ Colombo did stand in that room where you go to visit him, because he was there visiting the crypt of his own brother, Fiore.
Oh, gosh.
So his vibrations are in that room. There's no question about it.
No question.
And so in any event, after the passing away of Fiore, then Russ, he was crestfallen. He was brokenhearted because this was his best friend and confidant. And because Lansing was a good friend of Fiore and he was an older guy, Russ kind of latched on to him as more or less adopted him into Fiore's big brother role. And then over the next few years, Lansing, of course, he was Russ's photographer and took great pictures of him and everything, but they became very close friends, and Russ would ask him his advice on personal and career matters. And so Lansing felt very much a part of his life and very important in Russ Colombo's life. Mm-hmm. And during the period when Russ Colombo was dating Sally Blaine, Lansing was always with him. When Russ would take Sally out on a date, Lansing would come along as the third wheel, and they'd be like the Three Musketeers and go out to dinner or to a movie or this or that or the other. And Sally was quite happy to have Lansing along. She didn't mind at all and all this kind of stuff. So it really wasn't, there wasn't any conflict there with Lansing feeling like, Russ is paying all of his attention to Sally Blaine and, ignoring me. However, this situation did not, transfer over when Russ started dating Carol Lombard. She wasn't that crazy about Lansing, didn't want him coming on their dates, and so I think that Lansing started to feel like he was being left out of Russ's life. And So on the 2nd of September, well, first of all, let me go back. After the recording session on August 31st, when he did all these beautiful songs and ended up with I See Two Lovers, that night at a theater in Inglewood, California, they had the Universal Movie Studios, Universal Pictures, had a sneak preview of Wake Up and Dream, which they had just finished editing and putting together, the mm-hmm. movie starring Russ Colombo and June Knight. And they decided to have this sneak preview. And so Russ and Carol Lombard actually disguised themselves incognito and went to that theater to watch the movie and to sit there so that they could kind of absorb the atmosphere and see what the people were thinking, you know, who were watching it, you know, whatever their reactions were. Mm-hmm. Lance Brown happened to be there too, but he was not sitting with them. He did not communicate with them. So I don't know, you know, they had kind of been estranged. But on Sunday, September 2nd, Russ went over to Lansing Brown's house, and the rest is history. Some people say that there was an argument. There was someone who worked in the house, the household servant, who heard shouting and loud voices and argument going on.
All right. Okay, wait one second. Let me give what most people, my listeners, let me just throw this out there, and then the historian will just move along with it. This is what we feel. This is what we heard. Isn't that what we feel? That this great body went over there. No. See, we thought it was in Russ Colombo's house, but we're saying it was actually in Lansing Brown's house.
Lansing Brown's parents' home, yes, at 584 Lillian Way. Yes.
Okay.
He lived there, yes.
Okay, so Russ went over there, and I guess that's why the Derringers or whatever it was on his wall then. Okay, so apparently Mr. Lanson Brown, he wanted to light a cigarette, and those good old matches you can just strike on the heel of your foot, he went and struck it on some old gun that's hanging on the wall, which discharged, and a bullet went flying out, and it ricocheted off of something and went directly into Russ's eye. He died 3-4 hours later. That's the official story. That's all we know, Mr. Lee. But now you on the show. Let's go from there.
Well, you know, you're partially right. They were antique dueling, well, not dueling pistols, but they were like flintlock pistols that dated somewhere from around the 1830 to 1840 period. Interestingly enough, the story is that Lansing Brown actually acquired this pair of pistols at an antique shop in Los Angeles while he was out on one of these three-way dates with Russ and Sally Blaine. So Russ Colombo was actually with him. This was several years before the incident, but when he bought these weapons. Now, what Lansing Brown told the police, it wasn't that the pistols were on the wall. He kept them on his desk. He said, oh, I was playing around with one of them, and Russ had the other one. And what I did, I don't know why I was doing it, but I used to use this to strike a match on the hammer, and I didn't realize that there was a load of gunpowder and a mini ball in this pistol from back in the, you know, Civil War or something nobody knew about. And when he struck the match using the hammer of the gun, it went off, and the mini ball allegedly ricocheted off of the top of his desk and then struck Russ in the left eye. And of course Russ immediately slumped over unconscious. Then Lansing Brown started screaming for his mother to come in, and his parents came in. His father called the police first and then the ambulance. And by the time they came, they concocted this story that this is what happened. But the physical evidence, and it's been documented by people who, you know, recreate crime scenes for cold cases and everything, that this is highly implausible. Not only that, but in the book that I read that I recommend to everyone, A Prisoner of Love by Tony Toran, mm-hmm. there's a a statement in there from an Army officer in 1940 who stated under oath, he said, I served in the Army with a fellow officer who had been one of the Los Angeles Police Department's investigating officers at the Russ Colombo crime scene. And he told me that in looking at those pistols, they were so corroded that the hammers were so rusted that he doubted there was any way that anyone could ever make those things fire.
Hmm.
And the fact of the matter is that the Los Angeles Police Department never test-fired either pistol, the one that Lansing Brown claimed discharged and hit Russ Colombo, nor the one that he claimed that Russ Colombo was playing with at the time as well. And during the post-mortem examination of Mr. Colombo's body, the bullet was never removed, nor examined, obviously, from inside the skull of Russ Colombo. It's still in his skull inside that crypt at Forest Lawn to this day, 75 years later.
Mm. And
so this was a very shoddy conduct of an exam of a crime scene investigation by the Los Angeles police. Of course, in the 1930s, the Los Angeles police were infamous for being very corrupt and very incompetent. And not to mention the fact that Los Angeles, being a company town, meaning the companies that run this town are the movie studios, and immediately when this happened, Universal sent their head of public relations, put him in motion, and I think that it suited the studio to have the story be that this poor man was just the victim of a freak accident, unfortunate accident, than to have him being murdered by his best friend for whatever reason that may be.
Well, you are correct, sir. No question about it. And I wanted to mention, I've done so much research on this, and you are correct. Yeah, it was the most corrupt. Believe me, it was the organization at that time was the most corrupt. Bordellos were paid off. Everybody was paid off. And there was a guy, James E. Davis, was the chief of police. I'm not going to go into that, except a very corrupt man. So I can understand that things could happen. People are paid off. And if this man, who the chief of police at that time of the most corrupt organization of the of the forces, I mean, yeah, if he's approached by these big picture studios with big money, then it's like, okay, let's just get this out of here. I don't need, this man had a lot of problems of his own and with all kinds of stuff, political. So let's humble dying, let's just get this over with, and thanks for the money, the production studio. Thank you so much. I mean, what else can you say?
Well, we've all heard the expression, the police rushed to judgment. We've heard that, of course, most recently, like in the O.J. Simpson thing. Oh, the defense lawyers say, oh, the police rushed to judgment, saying this was O.J. and everything. But the rush to judgment in the Russ Colombo incident was so egregious that newspapers hit the street while Russ Colombo was still lying unconscious and dying at the Good Samaritan Hospital, and the story in the paper saying, Russ Colombo, victim of a gunshot accident. He was accidentally shot, blah, blah, blah. Well, how did they know it was an accident? They didn't even investigate it. I mean, and here, before the man was even dead, they were proclaiming it to be an accident. The movie studios, they were spreading around the largesse, they bought whatever story that they wanted to have out there.
The biggest. They ran the town. MGM, Paramount, all those guys, they ran the town. That was the money in that town. So the police department.
They still do, my friend. They still do.
They still do.
They still do.
So what they say, people need to have their jobs and, economy. So they put it out there. Well, we've heard a lot of stories of that they put out there. We have to believe that. Just to keep things going So, yes, sir, you're probably 1,000% correct. It's like you said, it's a town driven by economy of the studios. So, wow.
So, you know, the thing of it is, the real true story, only two people could really tell you, and that would be Russ Colombo and Lansing Brown. And unfortunately, neither one of them are giving any interviews these days. So we'll never really know. It's just like the JFK assassination, the Robert Kennedy assassination, the Martin Luther King assassination. You know, is the story that we actually got the true story? Well, you know, some people believe it, other people don't. And how will it ever be settled? It won't.
No,
it won't.
No,
but
no, it
there's,
won't,
you know, but we can take a guess as to, you know, what might have transpired. The author of the book Prisoner of Love, Tony Turan, basically his scenario was that Lansing Brown was a quite unstable type of a personality. He was very attached to Russ Colombo. Of course, as I said, he had been Russ's closest friend and his personal confidant for many, you know, several years. But when Carol Lombard took over Russ's life, more or less, and his career, she was guiding his career. She was his confidant professionally and personally, and more or less left Lansing Brown out in the cold. And so Mr. Turan conjectured that Brown kind of lost it, pulled out a gun, not the gun that was claimed to be the murder weapon, but a gun that was secreted from the police that they never found because obviously they didn't investigate anyway, and was threatening to commit suicide right in front of Russ. And Mr. Turan conjectures that Russ grabbed the gun to pull it away from Lansing so that he wouldn't harm himself, and it accidentally discharged and struck him in the eye. You know, and now that may be the case. Other people might say, well, Lansing Brown was so distraught that he was losing the best friend of his life that he pulled one of these, well, if I can't have you, no one can. And it was just a flat-out murder. So I don't know, you know. I don't know. But the one thing I do know that in my heart, I do not buy the story that the LAPD and Universal Studios put out there that the guy was striking a match and had long-forgotten powder charged with a mini ball that had been there since 1840. Give me a break. You know, there's no way that I'm going to buy that story. I mean, I just don't buy it.
No. No, well, no, you know, in retrospect, of course, the whole thing is ridiculous, but that's what was given to us at the time, so we accepted it. We accepted it, and that was fact. And, you know, it wasn't really a big deal at that point. That's what the story was. But now, after these years went by, what was really going on there? I mean, you told me you have in your possession a copy of that statement from that officer that said, no, these guns, there's no way they could have ever discharged anything.
That's right.
Yeah.
Well, you know, and I guess, you know, that's it. I mean, we'll never know. So, you know, I leave it to your listeners to make up their own mind. And, you know, because your listeners are, you know, eminently intelligent people because they listen to your program, and I'm sure that they'll come to their own conclusions on this.
Well, thank you.
Know.
Yeah.
But, you know, notwithstanding, as I mentioned earlier, after the last session, the musicians were so happy, they said, hey, let's all go and have a big party, and we'll have margaritas and tacos and everything down in Sonata, and Russ was going to go with them, but he changed his mind because his mom was sick. She had had a heart episode. She was in the hospital, I think, at Santa Monica. And so he didn't want to leave town. So this thing about his mom plays into this story because when he died, the family felt if we tell mom that her baby, because he was her baby, he was the last one, as I said, the 12th of 12, and so you can imagine how he was doted upon, not only by his mom, but his sisters and everything. They said, we cannot tell mom. It'll kill her. And so she was never told that Russ Colombo was dead from September 2nd, 1934, the day he died, until she died in 1944.
Oh, my gosh. Oh, my gosh. It was, again, it supports what you said earlier about how much she loved him, that she would make his career so much bigger than hers. You don't hear that these days, you know. Of course, it's the other way around. But, gosh, she loved him that much. And then, gosh, he took a powder and gone unexpectedly, and the world mourned. And that's what she did. She.
Well,
so
you're speaking about Carol Lombard.
Yes.
Because Carol Lombard participated in this subterfuge, I guess you would call it. I mean, it was a humanitarian subterfuge done for the best of reasons, because mom would have just dropped dead on the spot if she would have been told that Russ was dead. So for the next 8 years that Carol Lombard survived, because don't forget, she was killed in January of 1942 in a plane crash. She died with her mother in a plane crash outside of Las Vegas.
Okay.
And they're buried side by side, by the way, not buried, but entombed in crypts side by side in the same mausoleum as Russ Colombo is. But Carol Lombard and Russ's family participated in this cover-up of his death, to where they would send letters ostensibly from Russ to his mother from time to time, or she would send him letters, oh, mama, you know, Russ is too busy to write. He's on this big tour in Europe. Everything is going great. The people are going crazy for him. His career is just skyrocketed. He's a huge star. And she was so happy to hear all of this stuff. And then even after Carol died, for the next couple of years, they still kept it up until finally Julia Colombo, Russ's mom, passed away in 1944, and her last words were, I'm so happy for Russ.
Oh, my God. Oh. I'm sorry.
This is an amazing story. I mean, who could keep a secret like this for 10 years, and they did. And they went to the point of they would get these letters postmarked at these different cities. Well, oh, Russ is on the road. Gee, Mom, yeah, I want to come home and see you, you know, blah, blah. Oh, but everything is going so great, and I've got all of these commitments. Finally, my career took off thanks to you making me learn how to play the violin, blah, 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 you know. And it kept the old lady happy. And she never knew that her son died until she met him in heaven.
I'm kind of choked up right now. Seriously.
It's an amazing story, Chris. It's just, it's a beautiful story in a way, but it's heartbreaking. It's just
Because he died. I mean, it's a beautiful story, you know, of what they did for his mom, but, all right.
But you know, he died, but you know what? He didn't die. Because here we are, more than 75 years, almost 76 years later, September 2nd coming up, will be the 76th anniversary of his death.
Wow.
And we're still talking about him. And you're playing his records on the internet, which Russ Colombo never heard of the internet. If you would have gone up to Russ Colombo when he was alive and said, hey, Russ, what do you think of this thing called the internet? He'd say, what are you talking about? I've never heard of such a thing, you know?
He threw me away, yeah.
And yet, people in all over the world, if somebody in China could be listening to this thing right now and listening to these songs, some of which haven't been played since this man died.
It's true.
On the radio.
you know?
Part one last week, and this is part two, will be on the best of Sunday night, and it'll be there for the entire world to listen to at any time they want. And
the thing of it is, speaking about him not being gone, the influence, we talked about it before, and it bears repeating, the influence that this man had. And I want you to play one more song,
yes, sir,
Chris.
Which
one? Because Russ, as I said, was so in love with Carol Lombard. I mean, he had been in love with Dorothy Dell. He had been in love with Sally Blaine. He had been in love with Hannah Williams. You know, maybe he even had a little thing for the older woman, Pola Negri. He definitely didn't have a thing for Greta Garbo, but that was all a concoction of, Connor. but with Carol Lombard, he loved her so much, and he wrote a special song just for her, but he died before he was ever able to record it. And as I said, we know he died in 1934, but in 1950, this song was discovered in his effects, and it ended up being published, and it was recorded and made into a very big hit in 1951 by the aforementioned great Mr. B., Billy Eckstein.
Oh.
And it was written especially for Carol Lombard, and Russ was telling her, Carol, I'm yours to command.
Wow, what a great way to top off the evening with the great Mr. B, Billy Eckstein. I had a pleasure of meeting him, a gentleman as well. But, Mr. Damon, looking at the clock on the wall, my gosh, we had so many more things we wanted to do, and something else we wanted to play for the sign-off. Any last comments, as brief as it can be? We have to go, but, sir, thank you again. I'd like to thank everybody in my own words, and with the sign-off we're planning, sir?
Well, thank you. You know, Chris, that song is just so wonderful. It's a shame that Russ never recorded it, because unlike with some of his earlier compositions where he wrote only the music and someone else, such as Leo Robin, wrote the lyrics for Prisoner of Love, for example, I'm Yours to Command was words and music by Russ Colombo. Mm-hmm. So he was not only a wonderful composer, but he was a poet as well. And with a romantic heart, a wonderful man. And you know what? As long as he lives in your heart and in my heart and in the hearts of all the folks that are listening now, and we share him with our friends and with our family, this man will never, ever, ever pass away. He'll live forever. And as long as we keep him alive in our hearts. So it's been a real pleasure being on your program. I thank you very much for inviting me. And yes, it's time to sign off. And I think we should sign off the way Russ would sign off with.
Yes, sir.
You call it madness, but I call it love.
But I call it love. And I want to end it with Russ. So let me just give my sign off and thank everybody. First of all, Damon Lee, our Colombo historian. It could not happen without them. The listeners who let us know. It was a smash hit because we know everyone's out there still listening to the great Mr. Russ Colombo. But most of all, I want to thank Mr. Russ Colombo. If it wasn't for his talent, this library of beautiful music would not exist. Thank you so much, Mr. Russ Colombo. We will end tonight with you, sir, with the NBC chimes going out to you in the stratosphere. I'm Chris Lundy saying good night, good luck, and God bless. And God bless you, Mr. Damon Lee.
I can't forget the night I met you. That's all I'm dreaming of. And you call it madness. Ah, but I call it love. You made a promise to be faithful by all the stars above. And you call it madness. Ah, but I call it love. I keep repeating, my heart is beating for you constantly. You're all I'm needing, and so I'm pleading, please come back to me. You made a plaything out of romance. What do you know of love? And you called it madness. Ah, but I call it love. At first a slight suggestion that grew to haunt my mind was the eternal question, true love is hard to find. And then the day I found you, my love I had to share. I built my dreams around. Somehow you made me care. And you called it madness. that I call it love. And you called it madness. Ah, but I call it love. I keep repeating, my heart is beating for you constantly. You're all I'm needing, and so I'm pleading, please come back to me. You made a plaything out of romance. What do you know of love? And you called it madness. Ah, but I call it love.
Good night to Russ Colombo, who has sent you his program from the NBC studios located in the heart of Hollywood. This is the National Broadcasting Company.